are single. And that's not my only sales pitch, but that's one I wanted to make at least one time for the meeting. You know, and I mean, they got a good rate with the hotels there in the area. You can call and ask for them to help, you know, make the reservations for you. You pay for your room, but they'll make the reservations and get you the good price. And again, the food's good. Preaching's great. Really, really good this year. we've heard all your sermons. Yeah, I know. No, you haven't heard all my sermons. You haven't heard the ones you've heard. So maybe you're, and I'm always better when I'm away from home. You can wind up, especially get in front of a big crowd. It just really does something for you. Anyway, Hebrews 13. I guess I'm done fooling around. But do make a note of that, you know, and again, it's not just the context of this meeting, but I get notes and letters and mailings on meetings all year long, and honestly, it's not just because I preach at this one that I want you to go to it. I want you to go to it because it's one that they like me there. You know, if they like me there, then that says a lot uncommon, and again, maybe you might find the right person for you, and if you don't, you haven't wasted your time. Okay? You're not going to find them at Disney World or Alaskan Cruises or any of those places. Okay? Now, where we are here, and we're wrapping up the book of Hebrews, of course, and the 13th chapter gives us some evidences of love and fellowship and probably faith. Again, chapter 11 was examples of faith, and chapter 12 was encouragements to faith. We could call chapter 11, or 13 rather, evidences of faith. And love for the brethren, fellowship with one another, those are all faith in action. So it all, you know, no title is more correct than the other. Evidences of love, evidences of fellowship, evidences of faith, evidence of communion, whatever. You know, if you're alliterating, you could pick anything to go with what you're alliterating, or if you had an acrostic, you could jumble it around. Still be right, but I think faith is still in the foreground. These last three chapters of Hebrews, faith is really there. And the first evidence, we saw this last time, is compassion, Christian compassion. Let brotherly love continue. And that would be, first of all, for the saints. But then the second thing, in verse number 2, Christian compassion demonstrated towards strangers. It says there, be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Now, first question probably going to come to somebody's mind if you've been exposed to a lot of ultra-dispensational teaching, if you've been dispensationalized more than's good for you, and lots happen to a lot of people. Matter of fact, some people have been dispensationalized more than what's good for them, and the dispensations are right. They just hung up on their right division, and then some, they go nuts with it, and of course, that's way more than's good for you because their divisions are wrong in the first place. They've just gone nuts with dividing. But even people who divide it right, sometimes they get in what Greg Estep once called the 4-H club, you know, hyper, hollow, heretical, and hung up. They just, you know, and the Pauline mystery, and every time they get in front of a crowd, they got to draw a chart with a cross on it, you know, and it's an obsession, and you need to get off of it. I'm probably obsessed with refuting it, but by the same token, the question is going to come up with something like this, and that is, was that for this age? You know, entertaining angels unawares. Because, you know, one of those teachings that's out there in King James Bible-believing churches that are too dispensational for their own good is that angels don't have any ministry in this age. And the only reference to angels in this age in Paul's epistles, Galatians, though we are an angel from heaven, preach any gospel unto you, and that which we preach unto you, let them be accursed. And so that, since that's the only mention Paul makes of angels, that means angels don't have any ministry in this age, and any reference to angels in this age is bad. And so people who, you know, have anything to do with or believe in angels or believe that angels have anything to going on right now, they're all messed up. The angels are for after this age, in the tribulation period or millennium, and for before this age, but not for this age. No angels working in this age. I believe that. People believe that. And so, is this for this age? Now, maybe you never heard that teaching, but in case it got to you, I want to answer the question. Yes, I believe the verse is for this age. Do I think that I understand it perfectly? No. I don't think I understand it perfectly, but just because I don't understand it perfectly won't prevent me from commenting on it. That's funny. It happens all the time, by the way. people comment on verses they don't really understand. I hear it. But seriously, the angel part is a little tricky, isn't it? You could misunderstand what it's saying to entertain angels unawares. Entertain strangers. Be not forgetful to entertain strangers. For thereby, by entertaining strangers, some have entertained angels unawares. And I'll just say this much. No matter how you understand the verse, and again, I think you could maybe be a little off about the way you understand the verse, but probably not so far off that your understanding of the verse, you know, your concept, your theory about the doctrine of the verse, I don't think there's anything really, really dangerous here. I don't see big pitfalls that you can land in if you don't get this verse exactly right as far as the doctrine. But if you practice what the verse told you to do, it really wouldn't matter what you thought about what it meant by entertaining angels. You know, again, how do we entertain angels? I'll give you a couple of thoughts I have about it, and you can take them or leave them. But the point is not, do we want to unravel the doctrinal intricacies of entertaining angels and run all over the Bible trying to prove something, you know, some weird thing about entertaining angels? Or do we want to entertain strangers? And again, you know, the obsession of Bible believers, you know, King James only Bible believer, Ruckmanite, doctrinally, dispensationally inclined, is to spend all our time trying to figure out what it means by entertaining angels, and who cares less about entertaining strangers? Sad, isn't it? But that's, you know, that's kind of how we're put together. So let's get our mind off of the thing that we can fight over and be mistaken on and nitpick over, and let's get focused in on the thing that we're supposed to do. Now, Abraham, there is a case in the Bible, two cases at least. Abraham did it, Lot did it. Literally entertained angels. Angels came, knocked on their door. You can tell Abraham was the head of his house, by the way, because when the angels came, he sent Sarah in to make bread, and he went out to the grill and cooked meat. But when they got to Lot's house, Lot went inside and cooked something in the kitchen for him. Isn't that interesting? Check it out. Now, it's one thing, you know, it's manly to cook outside on the grill. But when the angel showed up at Lot's house, Lot said, "Mrs. Lot, you know, could you fix these guys something to eat? Dear, I hate to bother you, but would you mind fixing these gentlemen something to eat?" "Do it yourself." "Okay, well..." You know, but Abraham said, "Honey, I'm gonna get some steaks out of the freezer here. We got company. Could you make a salad or make some bread or, you know, whatever?" "Sure, and we'll have some hospitality." Now that happened, and I suppose it's possible that you and I might actually have the same opportunity. It's not beyond my ability to imagine that somehow, for some purpose, God may just give you the opportunity to minister to somebody like that in a similar way, and it's really an angel after all. But, you know, here's something I think is more likely to happen. You know, Bible-believing churches, again, in the best way I can construct the statement, sometimes I say Ruckmanite, I mean it in its absolute worst context, and sometimes I say Ruckmanite, and I mean it in its absolute best context. And when I say Bible-believing churches, you know, again, churches that really believe the book, we often attract some strange people, don't we? Now, I just wonder, I honestly wonder, Brother Sutek mentioned that when he was here, you know, we were having dinner, he said, I always know a real Bible-believing church because there's always a couple of oddballs in there. You know, it doesn't have to be a very large church. As a matter of fact, sometimes the smaller the church, the more the oddballs, you know, but you know, I wonder if sometimes God doesn't send an oddball to a church just to see what you're going to do with them. You know, see how you're going to treat them. See if you're going to really love them. And I can hardly think anybody stranger, talking about entertaining strangers, I can hardly think anybody stranger than old Brother Ralph. I mean, he was strange. He was strange. He was strange. Now, Ralph, you know, Ralph and Eva and some of their antics were pretty entertaining, weren't they? Now, again, we thought we were entertaining them, but they were really entertaining us. And I'm not trying to be an entertainer tonight, really. You know, I mean, I know I'm bordering on being a stand-up comic at this point, but it is funny. I mean, he did funny things. It was funny to watch him coming down the aisle, you know, with the clicking, that walker, you know, and kind of muttering and mumbling and sounding off over here, you know, finishing my verses for me and telling everybody what key the song was in and stuff. You know, this particular story is downright surreal. And some of you, you know, you remember hearing about it, but I was there. I mean, this really happened. We went down to PGM one night, and Ralph had this charismatic woman that was a friend of his. She's somewhere in her well-preserved 60s. You remember the night, don't you? It was out of this world, wasn't it? After that night, I understood the Blues Brothers, put it this way. I mean, it was no longer anything on mystery. But honest to goodness, this friend of his showed up, and I was taking testimonies. And, you know, again, she's probably in her 60s, but kind of a well-preserved in her 60s. And she got down on the floor and had her guitar, and she was going to give a testimony. And she started playing When the Saints Come Marching In and singing it. And, you know, it was a little on the, you know, the boogie-woogie side at first. But then, after singing a couple of verses, she started breaking into all these jazz breakdowns, you know, you know, and I mean, going seventh chords and diminished chords, you know, and walking all the way up and down the neck from chord to chord, and I mean, it was impressive, really. It was really fancy guitar work. But she, you know, and those black guys out in the audience are just getting with it, you know. And then after she finishes the Oscar, she turns around, and she says, "Hit it, Ralph!" And in those exact words, and Ralph had his clarinet, and he just started jamming. And she's, and it was all over. Yeah, she's still coming. No kidding. Okay, well, you know what she's capable of. She's pretty good, really. But honestly, I remember coming home, telling my wife, I said, "Honey, this is like something out of the Blues Brothers. It's just, this is unreal." And if you want another funny story, get Jeff Sierra to tell you about when Eva called Ralph at the nursing home and he just got a new answering machine, and he forgot to he didn't put a message on, so it had a woman's voice on the answering machine, and Eva thought he had a girlfriend. And that dialogue they had in the van on the way down the mission. Absolutely out of this world. Now, that was entertaining, wasn't it? He said, "No, you know, a lot of churches, I mean, really, honestly, a lot of churches would have tried to put him over in the corner and shut him up. You know, you shouldn't laugh at him." Well, and sometimes he had me in stitches. I can't help it laugh. But, you know, I was never embarrassed by him. Amen. He's one of us. He loves the Lord. You know, and we ought to be able to honestly enjoy the memories and some of the absurd things that went on. But by the same time, but, you know, really, we're not ashamed of it. You know, there's churches that, you know, one of these days will probably get an RU because it means members, but right now it's, "We don't want the Zicky people around us." You know, we've had people, thank God, we've had people visit our church because their church doesn't want to have one. Amen? Because, you know, we're from so-and-so university. I won't call any names, but it's very unusual. And, you know, they're just not our kind. Well, they're my kind. They're my kind, brother. I can understand them. And they can understand me. I'll stop there. But, you know, hospitality, "Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware." R. Kent Hughes said this. He said, "There's been an interesting development in suburban architecture. Long gone are the days when homes all had large front porches with easy access to the front door, enabling one to become quickly acquainted with others in the neighborhood. In the 1990s, we have architecture which speaks more directly to our current values. The most prominent part of the house seems to be the 2 or 3 car garage. Modern architecture employs small living and dining rooms, and now smaller kitchens as well, because entertaining is no longer a priority." Now, notice that in your homes. The dining rooms are tiny, and the living rooms are tiny. You know, the bedrooms are huge. Interesting. You know, because everybody's got their own place to go away from everybody else with their own TV and their own stereo and their own little world where they tuck themselves away. But, you know, our house isn't that old of a house. It's probably, probably built in the 70s sometime. And the living room's pretty large. The dining room's pretty large. The kitchen's very large. And our house before that was the same way. You know, for the number of square feet we have, it has a lot of space for people. The bedrooms weren't that big, but then you sleep there. You know, you need a place for your bed, your dresser, room to stand up, get changed, you know, and what else do you do up there? Read maybe a little bit, you know, so you get room for a chair. But then, you know, you're together with the family in the kitchen or in the living room or in the dining room. And when people come, they don't come to your bedroom, they come to those rooms. You know, and again, entertaining strangers, I mean strangers, is almost unheard of. Now, a couple of Sundays ago, I remember I challenged you to show real friendliness to visitors, not just by shaking their hand and giving them a smile and a glad you're here, but going beyond the handshake and maybe inviting them over for Sunday dinner. Now again, that's entertaining strangers. Now you say, well, you know, what's that got to do with angels? Well, here's a way it can entertain angels. If it resulted in somebody getting saved, if it resulted in somebody who was maybe, you know, backslidden and just thinking about getting right with the Lord, if it resulted in somebody getting grounded in a church that stood for something except obscene success, you know, some churches stand for that, but that's about all, and shameless consumption. But if it resulted in somebody getting in a church that stood for something besides obscene success and conspicuous consumption, if it resulted in that, there might be rejoicing in the presence of the angels. Again, you know, just rejoicing in the presence of the angels over one sin that repent. You know the verse. You know, you don't need the explanation. You've heard it a zillion times. It's not the angels rejoicing. It's rejoicing in the presence of the angels. Who's in the presence of the angels? God. And God rejoices. I believe the angels rejoice too. And I believe there's 24 elders which represent you and I. And again, we all get our point. We all get our chance to be in the front row because we're in eternity, you know, and 24 are up there at any given time. They shout it out. And then another 24 come up and they shout it out. They're representative, you know. Just like the courses of, really, just like the course of the Levites in the Old Testament. There are always 24 there from, you know, 12 or 24, two from every tribe serving, you know, and then their 2 weeks were up and then you can come a couple more or another set. And that's how it's going to be. So, you know, there's rejoicing in the presence of the angels. Doesn't mean the angels stand by and watch, but it means that more than the angels are rejoicing, God's rejoicing, and the saints, the translated saints who are already there in the presence of God, they're rejoicing. There's a whole lot of rejoicing. So maybe when we show hospitality, it must just mean that to entertain strangers, to show hospitality to people that we don't know, aren't in our familiar little group, not the ones that we normally run to as soon as the amen is said so we can, you know, have our little airtight click, but those people that we never met before, that need to feel like we care enough about them to go over and talk to them and ask them, hey, what are you doing this afternoon? Or what's your number? What's your name? And how about we get together sometime this week? You know, I'd like to get to know you better. Or maybe talk, you know, we tell you what the church means to us. Or, you know, best time is, you do anything right now? You might feel suspicious about you coming over in a week, you know, or Friday night or something. But you do anything right now? You see, that kind of investment in people, that makes much more difference. You know, again, we have enough visitors here. If we held on to every one of them, we wouldn't have room with chairs set up. We don't have a lot of visitors. But if we held on to every visitor that came in the last 2 years, just the last 2 years, we wouldn't have room if the chairs were set up in here. And you say, well, you know, why is that? And I'm not blaming you. But you understand, it might just be that it's not what I'm doing, but what we're not doing. You know, it may not be my preaching. It may be just a lack of personal investment. It doesn't mean nobody ever got it. I'm just saying a lot of people didn't. And the ones who are here, probably the ones who did get it. Somebody cared about you. Somebody not just called on you. I call on them. I send them a letter. But somebody from the church said, hey, we're glad you're here. We'd like to get to know you. That's, I think, entertaining to angels, because I think angels know what's right. And I think angels care about seeing people grow in the Lord, see people getting saved, care about people getting the truth. And so that would be entertaining. Of course, we can go beyond that to helping the needy. And again, entertaining, you know, there's sometimes just folks you just help because they need a little help. You have them over for dinner because, you know, they're having a little trouble getting groceries. They need a night out, you know, and so you invite them over to the house. Now, a lot of time, you know, or back then, a lot of folks were driven away from their homes and driven away from their jobs by persecution. And they didn't have money to stay in a hotel or a motel if they could find it. There weren't any motels. There were inns or taverns. they read that, and I think it's in Acts 27, you know, and there were, it's, they came to the three taverns, you know, they met the brethren at the three taverns, and when Paul saw me, he rejoiced. You know, it's the brethren, not the taverns, you know. The way, you know, it's one of those strange little things. He's talking about the brethren, not the taverns. But you could read it that he rejoiced when he saw the taverns. But kind of a modern, streamlined, you know, neo-evangelical social drinking kind of evangelism, I guess. But Christianity really is supposed to be the religion of the open door and open hearts. And again, those people, they didn't have money to stay in a hotel or a motel if they could find one. And so there was a real need for people to open up their homes to others. Because here, these Christians, they've been run, these Christians over here have been chased out of their homes and their businesses and left all their possessions behind because they left in a hurry and they've got nothing. And they show up in a church meeting and everybody says, "Hi, glad you're here." You know, and makes a beeline for all their buddies and their cliques, and then the visitors stand around like, "Yeah, and we can do go sleep under a tree somewhere or in a sewer pipe. What are we going to do?" And instead of that idea of readiness there to help, and most of the people come in this door aren't impoverished, and the ones that say they are looking for something. But by the same token, you can, and I mean, they're looking to milk the church. You know, professional mooches. There's people who make a career out of mooching off of churches. And I used to be a lot more sucker, a bigger sucker than I am now. I'm pretty hard about that stuff now. I'm real sensitive about it, and I usually catch them before they get too far. But you know, there have been times where I've still said, I think this one, I'm willing to risk it. So far, it's never been worth it. So far, we can take it every time. So far. The last time, we gave a family $600, last we saw them, and I thought that was a genuine need. I thought this is a real worthy thing. And then I called them, I went by there two or three times to the different nights, different times of day, and they never answered the door, never answered the phone after they took, and so, oh well, you know, and sooner or later somebody's going to have a real need, and everybody's going to be so callous that they won't care about meeting it. But most people, they don't need $600 to pay the rent or whatever, or $100 for groceries. If they need somebody to care about them. Show some interest in them for who they are personally, not prospects, not bricks to add to the building, but you know, somebody who the Lord sent in the door, and we're going to let them slip through the cracks, or we're going to invest in them. Not everybody that comes in is supposed to stay, but how do we know until we try to get them to? And how do we get them to until we really show that we're open to them, we're really willing to let them even in our homes? And yes, I do that. You know, pastors are supposed to be lovers of hospitality, according to Titus 1:8. But not just pastors. In Romans chapter 12, verse number 10, that's the love chapter, Romans 12, we're all told to be given to hospitality. You know, so I might love it more. And I do. I didn't used to. But it's one of those things that as you know, I've matured as a human being and as a Christian, and through my wife's influence over me, I've come a long time ago, came to where I enjoyed hospitality. I remember the most meaningful thing, one of the most meaningful events in my life, and I'll just relate it back to this. Some of you remember Bill Green. Remember when I had chicken pox? And a friend of mine came in from Alaska and preached that Sunday, Easter Sunday, I believe, and I was able to be there, but I couldn't shave. My face was all, looked like I got in a nice big fight and everybody had one but me, you know, and it was just a mess. But Bill Green, that was Bill Green. Now, he's gone on into hyperdispensationalism, but he was the best roommate I ever had. We rented a trailer my second year of Bible college. At PBI, we had a trailer together. And, I mean, it never went so smooth with anybody I ever lived with. It was great. We had a real cooperative. He always paid his part on time. I always paid my part on time. We both had chores, and we both did the chores that we were assigned, and, you know, and nobody got in anybody's way. Nobody expect, you know, it was, we really treated each other with respect and courtesy, and Bill was from a, you know, very cultured, affluent, high church Presbyterian family in South Florida, and of course I was a juvenile delinquent. But he did teach me some things about polish and culture and refinement. And the funny thing is, the next year God gave me a guy from Door County, Wisconsin, and I had to civilize him. And of course, Bill helped civilize me, which was took some doing. But this guy, honestly, he'd wear the same clothes for this guy from Door County. He'd wear the same clothes 4 days in a row. He'd jog in them. He'd go to work in them. He'd sleep in them. And all he'd do is splash on cologne. Cherry Farmer. had like six brothers, and his brothers would, they would spit on each other's food. You know, like, I mean, just across the table, spit on another guy's, and so that, you know, he wouldn't eat it. And they said that most of the time we got to where we needed it anyway. He said, my, that's, I had to civilize him, but that's another story. But anyway, about Bill Green, I introduced him to Wanda Grubbs, and he wound up marrying Wanda. And I kind of set him up, and I just thought, I knew Wanda, and Wanda and I were great friends, but she was like 6'3". We both, honestly, we both knew, did you know Wanda? No? Well, did you know, I'm trying to remember what her name, what her friend's name was. Claude? And what, Jana? I think her first name was Jana Claude. Did you know her? Wanda wanted to marry Glenn Stocker, but he wasn't interested. Anyway, but that's why I knew Wanda through Glenn. But then, you know, she was interested in Glenn. I was friends with Glenn, but they weren't, nothing. I was going nowhere. So I introduced her to Bill. Anyway, and after Neve and I met and we were engaged, Bill and Wanda had been married not quite a year, but they got a house and, you know, and they were doing real good. And one time when Neve came down to visit, she was able to visit me several times between when we met in November of 80 and when I graduated in May of 81. And one of those visits, Bill said, next time Neva comes, I want to have you guys over for dinner. And they had us over for dinner. And, you know, it may seem like a small thing to you, but I'm telling you what, it meant something to me. And, you know, he set up the grill and cooked steaks and all that. But she laid out the table with a linen tablecloth and put out the china and the crystal and the fine silver, and I'd never eaten on china. I never drank from crystal, and I'd never used fine silver. But they set that out, and they cooked a beautiful meal and just served my wife and I. She wasn't my wife yet, but they just served Neve and I, and that was just their way of showing that they loved us. They were happy for me. They were happy for her, even though they didn't know her, but they were happy for me because I'd met the person that I was going to spend the rest of my life with, and they wanted to do something that they could to make us just feel special. And you understand, setting that table with that linen tablecloth and that fine china and the crystal. And it wasn't, you know, it was an elegant meal, candlelit and all that sort of thing. But, you know, it didn't take but a little bit extra effort than paper plates and styrofoam. Really. And you got to wash the china. You got to be careful with it, you know. The paper plates, you throw them away. But if you want to make somebody feel special, you don't serve them on styrofoam. You know, you serve them on the fine china, the good stuff, you know. And whatever your best stuff is, obviously. But they, you know, they, again, both of, they didn't come from big money, but they came from upper middle class. Bill's was probably better off than Wanda's, but both of their families had class. And my wife had class. I didn't, but I was learning. And it's, again, but that gesture was just so significant. I still remember it. And again, I'm almost tearing up telling you about it. I remember it 22 years later. And say, what's that? That's I don't know if it's entertaining strangers, but it's hospitality. You know, really carried to the degree that goes above and beyond just here, you know, have a slice of pizza. But I'm going out, and that's not bad. Again, there's a lot of occasion for that, and that's fine to do that. I'm not saying that you should never, you know, say, hey, let's order a pizza and just slob around. That's nice to be that comfortable with somebody. But if you want to make, and I'm not saying every visitor that comes to church, you should lay out a china and crystal meal. But you get the point of what I'm saying. There's something really, really valuable in that kind of effort that tells somebody they mean something. And, you know, maybe some people are so used to it they don't recognize it anymore for what it is. It's just routine to them, and they're, you know, they're snooty and superior because we always eat on china. You know, it's a, but those of us who haven't always eaten on china. I don't know how many times I had cold pizza and warm beer for breakfast. Eating on china was a big thing. And so, anyway, lovers of hospitality, that's all of us. Now, there's other things in here, but obviously time's up. There's no choir rehearsal tonight, so everybody gets to go home a little bit early. Let's be dismissed in prayer. And Brother Henning, would you pray for us tonight?